Thank you, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm a postdoc in Thrive Lab, and Sarah Topp is also a postdoc. Before going into the talk, I would like to acknowledge my collaborators, Jeff Dukes from Purdue University, Bhushan Singh from UMass Amherst, our funding sources, USDA and IFA, NSF, and Department of Energy. And I would also like to thank Dr. Prasad for inviting us and giving us this wonderful opportunity. So plant metabolites, there are about more than 300,000 compounds. And those compounds that we know their function, which is essential and evident in plant growth and survival, we classify them as primary metabolites. And those compounds or those metabolites whose roles we are not yet definitive about, we classify them as secondary metabolites. Now, why are these secondary metabolites produced? Well, there are several hypotheses, like the waste product hypothesis, the vestigial hypothesis, the overflow hypothesis, and one of the important hypotheses that our lab is interested in is the increase in fitness hypothesis. That means it provides some fitness to the plants. We know that plant secondary metabolites have many different functions. For example, it helps plants from UV radiation. It protects the plants from pathogens. It also helps plants to acquire less available source of resources like nitrogen, phosphorus, low iron. It helps in plant bacterial interactions, for example, the legume rhizobium interactions. It also helps plants to tolerate the low and high temperature, and it also facilitates tritrophic interactions. Now, our lab is mostly interested in this class of compounds called phenolic compounds. They're very important because 30-40% of the organic carbon in the biosphere is constituted by phenolic compounds. And there are different classes of phenolic compounds, the monophenols with a single ring, the flavonoids with two rings, and the polymeric phenolic compounds, obviously the lignans. Now, phenolic compounds, their role in counteracting stress is pretty well known. For example, environmental stress causes increase in the reactive oxygen species due to the metabolic perturbations in the chloroplast and mitochondria. And this would lead to lipid peroxidation and DNA damage, which ultimately would lead to cell death. Now, phenolic compounds, because of their delocalization of the pi electrons, which increases their resonance stability, can quench these radicals, and that thereby they can prevent this lipid peroxidation and DNA damage. So now I would like to point you to the current paradigm relating abiotic stress to phenolic production. And currently, what we know is that in environmental stress increases the quantity of phenolics. But what about the localization of the phenolics, that's the distribution of these compounds within the tissue, and also the composition of these phenolic compounds? Well, we do not know much about those. Also, we know that all these changes would help in stress mitigation. But what about the ecological implications of these changes? For example, the nitrogen resorption, which is the resorption of nutrients during plant senescence. We do not know much about this. Also, how the stress mitigation and nitrogen resorption affects soil nutrient cycling, and ultimately how it helps plant adaptation. So there are many plant responses, of which some we know and some we do not know. But there are many ecological responses or ecosystem level responses of these production of phenolics in response to environmental stress, and most of which we do not know. So most of the studies that I'm going to talk about today are related to climate change and how it affects the production of secondary metabolites. And most of these studies were conducted at the Boston Area Climate Experiment, which is a climate manipulation study at Boston. We had three different precipitation treatments, an ambient precipitation, a drought treatment, which is the minus 50% of the ambient, the wet precipitation, which is the plus 50% of the ambient. And we have two warming treatments, a no warming treatment and a high warming treatment, which is ambient plus 4 degree increase in temperature. So the study species we chose was Quercus rubra, and that's a red oak, which is an important tree species in US. Not only that, it is a tree species which has a lot of secondary compounds. So the results first, I'll start with the primary metabolites. So I don't expect you to get all these 100 metabolites, but this is a heat map and hierarchical clustering of the 100 different metabolites. And one thing I wanted to make sure here is that all the different trees that is exposed to the different climatic treatments had a unique metabolic profile. For example, the drought high temperature, you can see that when it was exposed to a combination of drought and heat, it had a unique response than when it was exposed to individual treatments. Not only that, these metabolic perturbations were visible among all the different major metabolic pathways. For example, the glycolysis, the shikimate pathway, the TCA cycle, and the urea cycle. So there were differences in the metabolic pathways. Now, I'm interested to look in today's talk about the secondary compounds. So first we'll see how the flavonoids change. So this graph represents the y-axis as the flavonoids milligram per gram tissue, and the x-axis is the different climate treatments. So the red indicates the drought, the black indicates the ambient, and the wet is indicated by the blue. Within each precipitation treatment, there is a warming treatment, the ambient temperature, and the high warming treatment. So what happened when temperature and drought increased? What happened to the content of flavonoids? Obviously, the flavonoid content or the quantity of flavonoids increased with drought treatment. But this is not very surprising. When you have abiotic stress, the quantity of flavonoids increases. But what about the composition of flavonoids? So before going into that, let's revisit the flavonoid biosynthetic pathway. Again, it's a very extensive pathway, so I don't, the readability is poor, but two things that I want you to capture from this is that as we advance through this pathway, the hydroxylation pattern increases. So for example, if you take different compound groups, the flavonoids, to flavonols, to anthocyanidins, the hydroxylation pattern increases. Also, within a group, for example, flavonols, if we go laterally, we have a different hydroxylation pattern. There are different compounds like camphorol, which has a monohydroxy B ring. Quercetin, if we go to quercetin, it has a dihydroxy B ring. And if we go to mercetin, we have here a trihydroxy bearing. Now, if we relate this to their biological activity, we get this graph where the x-axis is the advancing stage of biosynthesis and the y-axis is the Tholox equivalent antioxidant capacity. So that's antioxidant quenching capacity. So it's basically showing a linear relationship, that is, with advancing stage of biosynthesis, the antioxidant capacity also increases. And this could be potentially due to the increasing trend in the ring hydroxylation. Now we will see how the composition changed with the different the climatic treatments. So this is a bubble plot. Each bubble represents a compound. And the upper panel is the drought ambient warming treatment. The lower panel is the ambient precipitation ambient warming treatment. That's a control. The size of the bubble indicates the fold change between the different treatments. So in the previous slide, we saw that drought increased the quantity of flavonoids. But here, it shows that not all compounds were increased in the drought treatment. Some of the compounds had increased in the ambient treatment. For example, camphorol, luteolin glycosides, they increase only in the control treatment. Whereas other compounds such as synapic acid, isoquercetin, Carrakin, quercetrin, they increased in the drought ambient treatment. Now, if you relate this to their biological activity, we get this graph where the x-axis is the advancing stage of biosynthesis and the y-axis is again the trolox equivalent antioxidant capacity. Now we can see that the compounds that are produced in the drought treatment, which is indicated by this red dots, they had a higher antioxidant capacity. And those compounds which are produced in the ambient treatment had lower antioxidant capacity. So broadly, the drought induced greater carbon flow through the phenylpropionate pathway, resulting in compounds with greater antioxidant capacity. Now, moving on from flavonoids to tannins. Tannins are also polymeric compounds of flavonoids. And we'll first look at the total content of tannins. Again, the layout of the graph is the same. X-axis, different climatic treatments. Y-axis is the total tannin content. Here you can see that when the plants were exposed to the most conducive or ideal conditions, that is the wet ambient and the wet warmer temperatures, the tannin content decreased. So what happens if we look at the different components of tannin? For example, hydrolyzable tannin. This is the structure of hydrolyzable tannin with a glucose moiety in the center. There is five gallic acid moieties attached to it. So we saw that the percent hydrolyzable tannins increased in the wet treatment. So wet had the lower tannin content, but the percent hydrolyzable tannins increased. Now if you look at condensed tannin, this is another class of tannins, or proanthocyanidins. This is the structure of the condensed tannins of proanthocyanidins. They are repeating units of flavonoids, and the N represents the number of repeating units, that is, it also represents the chain length or the degree of polymerization. So these repeating units could be procyanidins with the B ring having two hydroxyl groups, or prodelphinidins where the B ring has three hydroxyl groups. Now if we look at how the chain length of the proanthocyanidins change, we can see that the wet treatment, the chain length was higher in the wet treatment compared to the drought and the ambient treatment. And also, the wet treatment had the percentage of prodelphinidin units were much lower in the wet treatment. That means those tannins are more polymerized or they are less reactive. To summarize the phenolic story, we saw that flavonoids increased, not only their quantity increased, but also those flavonoids produced in the drought treatment had a higher antioxidant capacity, and those flavonoids were more associated with the cell walls. And with regard to tannin, we saw that the most conducive conditions for growth, that is the wet treatment, decreased the content of tannin, and those tannins had higher proportion of hydrolyzable tannins, and those tannins were highly polymerized or they were less reactive. And that means it provided less hindrance to cell expansion and growth. So we saw the plant responses to environmental stress in terms of secondary metabolites. Now, what are the ecological implications of these increase in the quantity or differences in the composition? Now, nutrient resorption is an important ecosystem property where most of the perennial plants resorb about 62% of nitrogen and 65% of phosphorus back to the system during senescence. And so this will help the plants in their next season. And most of these compounds are resorbed as organic molecules. So why is it important in an ecosystem perspective? Well, the compounds that is remaining in the senescent litter, it fuels microbial metabolism and it helps in nutrient cycling. So the identity of the compound that is remaining in the plant tissue after senescence is very important. So how did resorption efficiency of nitrogen change with the different climatic treatment. So this is a graph, and again the layout is also the same. The y-axis has the different, the x-axis has the different climatic treatments, and the y-axis has the resorption efficiency of elemental nitrogen. And here you can see that the drought no warming and the drought high warming treatments had the lowest resorption efficiency. That means most of the nitrogen is lost from the in the senescing tissue that the plant would probably suffer in the next growing season. And we wanted to see if it has any relationship with tannins, because tannins are compounds that can precipitate proteins. So we found a strong negative correlation of tannins, of elemental nitrogen resorption with tannin concentration. So as the tannin concentration increased, the resorption efficiency decreased. Now, what does this mean for nutrient cycling? We conducted two experiments, one in a lab study, another was a field study. So what we did in the lab study is that we collected this litter and we extracted this litter, the senescent litter, and we took the extract of each litter from each treatment, that's the drought, ambient, and the wet, and we added this extract to the ambient soils from the ambient plots. And you can see, and we measured the total carbon dioxide rust paired, which is the proxy for microbial activity. And here you can see that the wet treatment, the litter extract from the wet treatment, had the highest carbon rust paired. That means microbial activity was higher, and the litter was probably more labile. We also did an in situ and a reciprocal litter decomposition experiment in the field at base. So what we did was we collected litter from the ambient, from the drought, and the wet, and we added those litter to all the different treatment plots. So again, similarly, the drought litter from the drought and litter from the wet, again added to all different combinations, and they were exposed to the field condition to and incubated for about a year to see the percent mass loss of this litter. So this is a graph showing the percentage of mass loss of the litter. The x-axis is the different treatments. And here one thing I want you to notice is that the litter that is added, the drought litter, when added to the drought plots, decomposed much faster than when it was added to the wet plots. So potentially it could be due to the difference in the microbial community. So the microbial community accustomed to the drought litter might be more able to decompose this recalcitrant litter. So when it was added to the wet treatment plots, the decomposition was much lower. So to summarize, the environmental stress affected the quantity of phenolics. It increased the quantity in the drought treatment. It altered the localization and the composition. It would help in stress mitigation. In drought treatment, basically nitrogen resorption decreased, and both stress mitigation and nitrogen resorption, it would affect nutrient cycling and also adaptation of plants. And all these processes together could feed back to climate change. And if you think I got you guys to get interested in this line of research, we have an interesting opportunity in our lab. We have a PhD assistantship, and if you're it's basically focusing on ecophysiology of flavonoid biosynthesis in plants. And if you're interested, contact Nishantha Rayal. Thank you.
Was the wetter treatment, did that induce or reduce soil oxygenation, ventilation in the soil?
It was not that wet. I mean, it was not anything like inhibiting oxygen. No, it was not like a flooding condition or something like that. No, not at all. No.
You didn't get a saturated soil?
No, not at all. The maximum, I think the moisture content was like 25% volumetric water content. stop. Yeah.
And you had two treatments, wet and dry and normal and high temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any interaction between these in terms of the composition of your phenolics?
In terms of the...
One going up and individually, and when you put together, is it an alkalous reaction?
We saw that in the mainly in the with the extractable metabolites. With the extractable metabolites, the drought, the combination of the drought and the high temperature had a very different profile than when they were just exposed to drought alone or temperature alone.
The mechanisms will be very different.
Oh, yeah. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. But probably we can. Yes.
Have you worked with any other stress besides drought climate, like, I don't know, maybe insect damage or?
Our lab students work with herbicide resistance and production of, you know, secondary metabolites. Oh, our lab, there are PhD students working on other stress like herbicide resistance and how that affects the secondary compounds. But I mostly work with climate change.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.